Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We start today with the latest on the death penalty sentence for the Boston Marathon bomber. The Department of Justice is carrying forward a Trump administration request that the Supreme Court reinstate Boston Marathon bomber Jahar Tsarnaev's death sentence. Now recall, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the First Circuit, which is here in Boston, vacated that death sentence last year due to concerns both about whether the court sufficiently addressed potential jury bias and concerns about the failure to present certain evidence during the sentencing trial. President Joe Biden spoke against the death penalty during his presidential campaign. Here at home, families of bombing victims have spoken both for and against the death penalty for Tsarnaev in the past. Several members of the Massachusetts congressional delegation remain opposed to the death penalty, and Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley has spoken out against Biden's support of this DOJ decision. So there's a lot going on. Congressman Stephen Lynch joins us now to talk about it. He represents the Massachusetts 8th District, which includes Boston's downtown, South Boston, West Roxbury, and Brockton. Congressman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you, Tiziana.
I appreciate you joining us. And Congressman, I want to do justice to the complexity here. But let me start by just asking you your reaction to the administration's choice to continue with the Trump administration's appeal to the Supreme Court to reinstate the death penalty sentence for Tsarnaev.
So at full disclosure, as a state legislator, I called for the moratorium of the death penalty in Massachusetts. This was when the Innocence Project began their work in identifying numerous people. I think there were 61 people at the time that I called for the moratorium. There were 61 people on death row that had been exonerated by DNA. So that was based on the fallibility of our justice system and the fact that we were we had innocent people on death row. This is a different case, and you're right. It is extremely complex. I think that in this case where we had a jury, review all these issues, there's no question of guilt. I think the attorneys in their opening, stipulated that Mr. Tsarnaev did, with his brother, in fact wage war against innocent civilians, used a weapon of mass destruction indiscriminately to butcher children and innocent civilians. So if there was a case that justified the death penalty, this would probably be it, right? As much as I have problems with the death penalty generally, terrorism and like I say, waging war against an innocent civilian population is a grievous, grievous offense. And what this young man did was just sheer butchery and knowingly placed that device in the midst of innocent civilians and walked away.
Let me jump in there with you for a minute on a couple of things. First, you talked about supporting a moratorium. You're acknowledging this is different. In the aftermath of the bombing, you did support the decision by then Attorney General Holder to pursue the death penalty for Tsarnaev. As you know, what we're talking about here was a sentencing trial. And there's a lot going on because we know that there have been families of victims on both sides of this. We know that you're a longtime family friend of the Richard family. Their son Martin was killed in the attack. Their daughter Jane was severely injured. And they've opposed the death penalty for the bomber. And part of that is about moving on is the wrong word, but not keeping Tsarnaev in the public eye. And what about that? As we pursue these things, this just keeps coming back. People have to listen to this conversation again. They have to be reminded of that pain and loss. Where does that fit in the arc of justice and healing?
Well, look, I do understand Bill and Denise Richards' positions, and I respect them. They are just such good and decent people. And I understand that, you know, this keeps the name and the incident alive, and I certainly understand with the desire to just move on. I certainly understand that, but I also understand the Department of Justice, what they're doing, and you know, and I truly believe that Joe Biden has a position similar to my own, that you know, he has spoken against the death penalty, and I understand that, but this is one of those cases. This is a case of terrorism. This is the worst of the worst. This was malice at its worst. This was totally reprehensible against human beings.
Do you believe then, so this was a question I did want to ask you, there are those who perceive President Biden's decision here as reversing himself on his opposition to the death penalty. There are also those who perceive this as part of his very public decision to not intervene in decisions made by the Department of Justice to allow it to be independent. Which of those two things do you think is what's happening here?
Unquestionably, the latter. I think that, you know, especially following President Trump, who tried to use the Department of Justice as a tool over and over and over again for his own political benefit and you know, to appease the base, his base. I think President Biden is trying to do just the opposite. He's trying to let the rule of law prevail here. He's trying to, you know, to send a message to his Department of Justice that he will not engineer, he will not pre-bake any results here. He won't use the Justice Department as a tool, and that he trusts their judgment.
Does that undermine later attempts by potentially President Biden himself, by his ability to support, for example, your colleague Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley's call to abolish the death penalty? If the administration supports it here, does that undermine a move later to abolish it?
I'm sure there'll be conditions on, you know, the abolishment. I think, you know, there are other matters. Somebody executes a federal judge. Is that still going to be warranting the death penalty? So, I think this is a case that was decided by a jury in a previous administration. This has been picked up by the Department of Justice, and he wants to avoid interference. I don't think deciding prospectively whether the death penalty shall be used in the future is interfered with by the decision to allow the Justice Department to pursue this case.
I am struck by a line from a recent column that Yvonne Abraham wrote in the Boston Globe. She said, quote, "A life, even one considered worse than worthless, is never ours to take. If Biden can't draw the line here, how can he draw it anywhere?" End quote. And I just want to get your thoughts, your response to that.
Well, I think certainly the line can be drawn at any moment, you know, that the president chooses. That's in his power. I don't necessarily agree with Ms. Abraham's preposition.
So in a minute, I'm going to move on to something else and ask you just a quick question about something else. But before we go there, you know, we are in this moment where there is the arc of criminal justice and our justice system in this case. And then there is the arc of healing for us as a community. It's 2021 now, a very different time than when the jury made its decision. How do we think about Does the arc of justice here, actually, in the conversations we have to have in this challenge and the revisit of the court cases, does it hinder our healing, or do you feel like we are on a path to healing as a Massachusetts community and an American community here that can withstand these ups and downs as the cases go on?
I'm not sure I follow you.
Well,
there's a rule of law here. And the question is, or could be proposed, do we regard, you know, waging war against the civilian population? Is that something that warrants the death penalty? Or is that something that's going to be treated like any other crime?
That's really clarifying. Thank you, Congressman. And I'm sorry if that question was a little sort of unclear. There's so much complexity here. Before we let you go, I do want to ask you just one question on another subject. There was another big House vote today. It was global in nature, but it's again one of those where the legacy comes home for so many who served in the military from our region. And that's the bipartisan vote to repeal the 2002 Iraq War Powers Resolution, which authorized the invasion of Iraq. You voted for authorization in 02. This now goes to the Senate, but in your view, is this the end of something? Is this the end of this expensive, deadly saga? And are we doing it also to remove the temptation for a future president to abuse it for other means? We know both Presidents Trump and Obama used it for other justifications.
I certainly think after 20 years, dear Lord, this has gone far too long. Remember, this just requires the president to come back to Congress. If they believe they need war powers authorization, that's all it requires is for the president to return to Congress to gain that authorization and to present the facts underlying that request. So, I think that's something that should be required of every president at every opportunity. So I have voted repeatedly over at least the last 10 years eliminate the pre-existing AUMF and to require the president to come before Congress.
And that is Congressman Stephen Lynch. Congressman, I appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Diana, thank you so much. Always good to speak with you. Thank you.
Appreciate it.